Well, we move on now. And the question is, has BC's ability to stop Kinder Morgan and the Trans Mountain Pipeline been thrown into question? Attorney General David Eby says BC can't deliberately stall on permits without risking a very costly lawsuit. Eby says he has been tasked by Premier John Horgan with identifying ways to stop the project, but permitting isn't one of them. The $7.4 billion expansion of the pipeline has already been approved by Ottawa and the former provincial government. All that news as new research emerges from the Raincoast Conservation Foundation that many of BC's marine mammals are at high risk from oil spill impacts. My guest right now is Misty McDuffie. She is a Raincoast biologist and co-author of the new paper that we're speaking about, put together by Raincoast and Oceanwise Conservation Association. Good afternoon, Misty.
Hi, Pamela.
Thanks a lot for being on the program.
My pleasure. Thanks for your interest in this topic.
Okay. Obviously, your research, is it predicated on what could be happening with the expansion of Trans Mountain, or is it just a general?
Yeah, it actually wasn't predicated, but it just so happens that by the time when we first started this analysis to the point where we've finally published a paper, that process can often take years, and in this case, it did. So I think that we began work on this project at least 5 years ago based on the growing risk that tankers were generally presenting on this coast, and without a really good analysis of how marine mammals in BC might be impacted by oil spills. Okay. And so that's really what prompted this review.
Okay. What did you find?
So we sort of took a look at it from two perspectives and sort of put a lot of information into a big matrix. And one perspective was saying, well, how is an individual animal, say a killer whale or a sea lion, could be exposed to an oil spill, say whether they, in the case of whales, they're coming to the surface to breathe, or the case of sea lions where they're breathing at the surface but also hauling out on land. And so we looked at the difference in physiology across all the marine mammals in BC. And then we said, okay, so what do we know about the populations of those mammals in BC? Like, are they healthy populations? Are they small? Are they vulnerable? Are they clustered in certain areas at certain times? And so putting all of that information into a matrix, we essentially found that of 21 marine mammals in British Columbia, 18 of them are at high risk of consequences if they were to encounter an oil spill.
What are the consequences?
So they range. Some of this information, like really information from on how animals are impacted by oil spills, really comes from past oil spills, because you can't do these kinds of studies ethically. So, and then the other problem with looking at past oil spills is that a lot of times when you're talking about cetaceans and marine mammals, the carcasses sink. So you can't really, there isn't actual evidence to attribute the cause of death. Now, that started to change with the Exxon Valdez oil spill and with the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. But we know that, say, killer whales, for example, there were two types of killer whales that encountered the oil spill in Alaska. And we saw irreversible damage to one population, which has never recovered, and the second population has taken 30 years to recover. And there was a lot of individual deaths in both those populations. So when we apply that to, say, southern resident killer whales here in waters of the Salish Sea, it's likely that an oil spill in Harrow Strait would have lethal consequences if southern residents were exposed to that oil spill within the first 48 to 72 hours, and they could still have lethal consequences over the long term after that.
Got lots of questions for you. We're going to take a break right now. You're listening to BC Today. Please join the conversation when we get back. We're with Misty McDuffie. She's a Raincoast biologist and co-author of this new paper that we're talking about, The Impact of Oil Spills on Marine Life. I'm Pamela McCall.
Now back to BC Today with Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Thanks so much for being with us. We're talking about new research emerging from Raincoast Conservation Foundation that many of BC's marine mammals are at high risk from oil spill impacts. My guest is Misty McDuffie, Raincoast biologist and co-author of the new paper just out on this. If you'd like to join our conversation from Kelowna, please do. 1-855-686-1161. That's 1-855-686-1161. In Victoria, 250-386-1161. *1070 on your cell phone. You can email us, talk@cfax1070.com. So, Misty, not good news here. I want to get into the type of oil. You were referencing the Exxon Valdez oil spill, different from the oil, the diluted bitumen that might be impacting killer whales here. How does that work? If you could explain to our listeners the difference and how that, if it did factor into your study.
Well, we tried to be generalists in terms of what products might be spilled. Everything from lighter fuels like diesels through to heavier crudes like what was spilled in Exxon Valdez to diluted bitumen. And that whole piece, that pathway and fate of those different oils plays a very important role in how you deal with an individual oil spill. But we did include the possibility of oil sinking, and that can happen regardless of whether it's diluted bitumen. Even heavy crude oils can still sink. So we had to consider just those routes of exposure, but sinking was one of those routes of exposure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's amped up for sure.
Yeah, and there's never really been a marine spill of diluted bitumen, so much of the speculation on its fate and behavior is still that, but we can assume based on, you know, the literature and some of the studies that have been done that the first, you know, 48 to 72 hours, there will be, you know, toxic lethal fumes coming from the diluent component of dilbit. And then from the bitumen component, that can lead to the chronic exposure. So diluted bitumen presents the worst of both types of oils. It has the acute lethal component, and it has a chronic long-term component.
Okay, so there are fumes, but there's also ingestion, hmm?
Yeah, so, and this is this sort of exposure pathway, and this is what we really tried to decipher was, like, it's at some level, it's obvious that marine mammals would be inherently vulnerable to oil spills because they do most of their living and breathing at the air-water surface. But we wanted to see whether there were differences in that vulnerability within different marine mammals. And we found that, yes, there is, depending on how you look at the populations and how you look at those routes of exposure. So inhalation at the surface is one. If you're a sea lion or a seal and you can haul out onto shorelines, that contact with oil is another. Whether you ingest either the oil directly or through prey, that's another route, and the contact with the oil on an animal's skin. So those are sort of the routes of exposure.
We saw after the Exxon Valdez disaster, marine life, birds and the like, being killed, being cleaned and also killed. How do you clean diluted bitumen?
Yeah, a marine mammal.
Yeah, and how do you do that when it's diluted bitumen? Is it tougher?
Yeah, and again, I don't know that there have been, maybe from the Enbridge spill in Michigan, but diluted bitumen is a very sticky substance, but even regardless of that, being able to catch a marine mammal and contain it to the point where mm-hmm. you can clean it is, I would say, almost an impossibility. There may be isolated cases where you could catch seals, but generally anything larger and more, free-ranging or long-ranging, would be almost an impossibility.
How does this factor into approvals, environmental approval on this project?
Right. Well, the interesting thing is that and this sort of gets into some of the bigger issues, but the way the National Energy Board in the end decided that they would deal with the risk of oil tankers in the Salish Sea was simply to not address it. So after going through the whole hearing process and having a you know, making their conclusions, they decided that this project ended in Burnaby, and they were not going to address the marine component of Trans Mountain. And that's how they've gotten to the point where they're saying this project can go ahead, and we're not going to consider the risk to southern resident killer whales.
Wow.
So it was dismissed. It was essentially it was dismissed.
Do you think that a lot of people are aware of that?
No, I don't think that. But that is the basis of our court case. So we have a legal challenge that will be heard this fall, and many other First Nations also have legal challenges. But our legal challenge is specifically about the fact that they decided at the 11th hour to arbitrarily drop the marine assessment from their decision.
Who's they, Misty?
So that's the National Energy Board, and then their recommendation to the federal, to our Canadian federal government. And so that, so they're... between both parties, the NEB and the federal government, that's the decision.
How do you pay for the legal fight?
Wow. So we have a fantastic team at EcoJustice, and they have been representing us. Like, we've been fighting in the courts on killer whales for quite some time, first to get all the aspects of their critical habitat recognized, and their to further their protection legally, because they're recognized as endangered, and now having a project that directly threatens this endangered population, that's the basis of our court case.
When we started the interview, Misty, I was pointing out Attorney General David Eby's comments made yesterday that BC cannot deliberately stall on permits for this project without risking a very costly lawsuit. What do you make of that assertion and the fact that Premier John Horgan has tasked Eby with identifying ways to stop the project, but permitting isn't one of them?
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with that. But the interesting thing is that Trans Mountain relied extensively on the fact that they would be doing more studies that would lead to the permitting of, you know, getting these permits. And for a large part of the aspects that I'm familiar with, the work has never been done. So even though Trans Mountain said, oh, well, we're going to do all this work and get these permits, they're just sort of, you know, moving right ahead without doing some really fundamental baseline work and on mitigation especially.
So with your lawsuit, then you're particularly honing in on the fact that the impact on killer whales has not been considered. Am I getting that right?
What they did in the process, and the problem was that they did consider killer whales, and we submitted evidence, Kinder Morgan submitted evidence, and the federal government submitted evidence. And there was no disagreement amongst any of those parties that the implications to killer whales in the Salish Sea was adverse and significant, with population-level consequences. Nobody disputed that. And so that's the reason, because it's and also that there isn't any mitigation that can address those consequences. So the only way the NEB could actually get around that was to end the project in Burnaby, because nobody disputed that the increase in tanker traffic was going to have these effects on southern residents. And that's not just from oil spills. A lot of that is from the sound, the acoustic and physical disturbance from the increased volume of vessel traffic.
Misty, how can they just say, hey, the project ends here? I mean, then whose jurisdiction is it?
Exactly what we'll find out in September, because that's really the question at the heart of this. How did you arbitrarily make a decision after moving forward in good faith that you were reviewing all the elements of this proposal, to all of a sudden backtrack at the 11th hour to say, actually, everything we did on the marine environment, that's actually not going to be considered in our decision?
I'm baffled. What do they base that on?
They base it on, it was the only way they could get around the Species at Risk Act.
How powerful is your lawsuit?
Well, I guess we'll find out. I think that we're actually going to court with a stronger case than we went to court with on Northern Gateway, because the work has been done really, and nobody disputes these significant adverse effects to southern resident killer whales. So we think it's a strong argument.
That's where the project ends.
Yeah. Yeah, that the project you entered, the British Columbians engaged in this process based on the fact that your review was a full review that included the marine environment. And nowhere up until the issuing of their decision did they say, oh, actually, it didn't include the marine environment.
Did your jaw drop?
Yeah. Our jaws dropped a few times in this whole process, but that was another one.
You know, Misty, it's a pleasure to talk to you, even though it's tough subject matter. I think you've got the right attitude here. Just keep on going.
Thank you so much.
All the best to you.
Okay.
We've been talking to Misty McDuffie. She's a raincoast biologist and co-author of the new study on the impact of an oil spill on BC's marine mammals. I'm Pamela McCall. You're listening to BC Today. Stay with us.